Robert J. Dunsweiler, Associate Professor of Systematic Theology and Apologetics at Biblical Theological Seminary.
As you can see, my subject is the courts and Bible reading in the public schools. I'd like to give a general introduction first, then some highlights of some of the court cases, some of the judicial decisions which have been made in this area. Then some analytical features of the decisions, and then some synthesizing observations. When I began to study this matter in connection with a course in educational administration at Lehigh University, I thought that it was a rather cut and dried question. I was soon to have my first impressions radically changed. I was amazed, first of all, to discover how many court cases there had been on this particular question. I was also amazed at how interested and keenly intrigued I became at reading the court cases themselves, the court records, and of the keen insight of many of the justices. I collected altogether 35 cases. The first of those cases, of course, came in the year 1854. 35 cases up to February 1976. Just quickly, let me note something about these cases. These cases are all named. The first case, this is rather historic because it's the first case dealing with the question of Bible reading in the public schools. Donahoe versus Richards, Supreme Court of Maine, 1854. I think it might be profitable just to read the summarization which I've made of that case in order that you might get a feel for the flavor of the cases and what is involved. And I will be doing that for a number of these cases. This action, Donahoe versus Richards, was brought by the father of Bridget Donahoe, a minor, against the superintending school committee of Ellsworth, Maine. Its object was to recover damages for, quote, maliciously, wrongfully, and unjustifiably expelling her, end quote, from a district school. The basis of the expulsion had been her refusal to use the, quote, Protestant version of the English Bible, unquote, as a class reading text. Having been denied relief in the lower court, her father appealed to the state Supreme Court, and the court found that the plaintiff, Bridget Donahoe, had made no objection to the Bible as a book which she may not rightfully be required to read in schools, but only to a particular translation. Indeed, the court said, the report finds that she was willing to read from the Douay version. So it wasn't really a case that she was against Bible reading or her father against Bible reading. It was against the King James Bible version. Accordingly, the Supreme Court of Maine, in a 4-0 decision, ruled non-suit, that is, against the plaintiff, and said that the Protestant version of the Bible may lawfully be preferred by the school committee. Now, this was 1854, and that really just began it. I'm going to run along quite rapidly and stop every once in a while at another case which brings out another facet of this whole thing until we have a full-orbed idea of the problem. The second case took place in the Supreme Court of Massachusetts, Spiller versus Woburn. This was in 1866, and it was decided in favor of Bible reading in the public schools. The third case took place in Ohio, the Supreme Court, and this case is entitled Board of Education of the City of Cincinnati versus Minor. It took place in 1873, and it was decided in favor of Bible reading in the public schools of the district in the city of Cincinnati, and there was no dissent. The fourth case occurred in the Superior Court of Iowa. States generally have a system of courts. You can have a magistrate's court, but generally you have a district court and then some kind of superior or appellate court, and then you go to the Supreme Court. Those are all state courts. Then the federal judiciary has its system of district courts and appellate courts and the Supreme Court of the United States. Well, this took place in the Superior Court of Iowa in 1884. It was decided in favor of Bible reading in the public schools. The fifth case took place in Pennsylvania. This was in the Court of Common Pleas. This is on a fairly low level. This case is entitled Hart versus School District of the Borough of Sharpsville. And this was recorded in the Lancaster Law Review, so I take it that it was in Lancaster County. It was decided in favor of Bible reading in the schools of the school district of the borough of Sharpsville. The date is 1885. The sixth case, that I'd like to refer to more specifically, this took place in Wisconsin. The Supreme Court of Wisconsin, and it has a long title, State by Relation of Weiss, W-E-I-S-S, versus District Board of School District Number 8 of Edgerton, Wisconsin. And I would like to specifically refer to that case. State by Relation of Weiss versus District Board of School District Number 8 of Edgerton was an action brought by certain Roman Catholic parents in behalf of their children against the school board of Edgerton, praying for a writ of mandamus. Mandamus is a special legal term. We are used, I think, more to the word injunction or enjoinment. An injunction the court issues to stop something. A mandamus the court issues to compel someone or some organization to do something. So an injunction says, stop doing what you're doing. The mandamus says, do what you're supposed to do. We don't see this term as often as we see the injunction. We've seen the injunction a lot in relation to strikes. Well, this was an action praying for a writ of mandamus to compel the board to prohibit the reading of the Bible, the King James Version, in the district schools. The petitioners claimed that Bible reading violated the Constitution of the United States in three ways. It violated the rights of conscience, first. Second, it compelled them to aid in the support of a place of worship against their consent. And thirdly, it was sectarian instruction. So first, question of conscience. Second, supporting a place of worship. And thirdly, sectarian instruction. To these claims, the court answered. To the third claim, that it was sectarian instruction, the court said, we cannot doubt that the use of the Bible as a textbook in the public schools and the stated reading thereof in such schools without restriction has a tendency to inculcate sectarian ideas and is sectarian instruction. To the second claim, that it compelled the Roman Catholic parents to aid in support of a place of worship against their consent, the court said, we must hold that the stated reading of the Bible in the public schools as a textbook may be worship within the meaning of the clause of the Constitution under consideration. If then such reading of the Bible is worship, can there be any doubt but what the schoolroom in which it is so statedly read is a place of worship within the meaning of the same clause of the Constitution. Being thus compelled to aid in such erection and support, they have a legal right to object to its being used as a place of worship. The court also added, if the stated reading of the Bible in the school as a textbook is not only in a limited sense worship, but also instruction, as it manifestly is, then there is no escape from the conclusion that it is religious instruction. And hence the money so drawn from the state treasury was for the benefit of a religious school within the meaning of this clause of the Constitution. To the first claim, namely that it violated their rights of conscience, The court said, "It is said, if reading the Protestant version of the Bible in school is offensive to the parents of some of the scholars and antagonistic to their own religious views, their children can retire." In other words, they can be excused from the classroom. "They ought not to be compelled to go out of the school for such a reason for one moment. The suggestion itself concedes the whole argument. That version of the Bible is hostile to the belief of many who are taxed to support the common schools and who have equal rights and privileges in them. It is a source of religious and sectarian strife. That is enough. It violates the letter and the spirit of the Constitution." Accordingly, the court ruled that the action of the circuit court, which had found for the school district, must be reversed, and so a writ of peremptory mandamus to compel the school board to cease and desist from this action was issued. And that is in Wisconsin, case number 6, in 1890. So as early as 1890, you have a fascinating case in which the ruling went against the use of the Bible in the public schools. Case number 7 took place in Ohio in the Common Pleas Court. It's called Nessel versus Hum, and which is a sort of an interesting name, but it's not as fascinating as a case which took place in the South some years ago entitled Balls versus Bats. Yeah, I couldn't believe that, but that's true. There's a case, Balls versus Bats. But this is simply Nessel versus Hum, which has a kind of a euphonious sound when you say it, Nessel versus Hum. However, it's a very unimportant case, and it was, however, decided in favor of Bible reading in the public schools. The 8th case is entitled Stevenson versus Hanyon, H-A-N-Y-O-N. Took place in Pennsylvania in a court of common pleas, and it took place in 1895. The issue is not clear. In other words, the way it came out, it's not clear whether it was in favor of or contrary to Bible reading in the public schools, because what actually happened in this particular case, Stevenson versus Hanyon, was that the principal of the school was conducting religious exercises in the school, but he was doing it according to the Methodist Episcopal form, and the objection appears to have been against his using the forms of the Methodist Episcopal Church, and thus against sectarianism. So it's really not clear, it doesn't spell it out, as to whether it's against or for Bible reading in the public schools. The 9th case is entitled Curran, C-U-R-R-A-N, versus White. It took place also in Pennsylvania in a court of common pleas in 1898. And the problem here was, again, it's inconclusive because the proceedings were adjudged to have been irregular. A judge, apparently, even prior to the Common Pleas Court, had preliminarily ruled that a writ of mandamus should be issued, and the Court of Common Pleas reversed it, said that was irregular, you shouldn't issue a writ of mandamus when you want to issue a writ of injunction. And so actually they said the whole proceeding was irregular and there was no decision one way or the other on Bible reading in the public schools. The 10th case took place in Michigan in the Supreme Court of Michigan in the year 1898 and is entitled Pfeiffer versus Board of Education of the City of Detroit. Pfeiffer versus Board of Education of the City of Detroit. That one I must refer to. Supreme Court of Michigan, 1898. It was an action brought by Conrad Pfeiffer against the Board of Education of the City of Detroit, praying for a writ of mandamus to compel the board to discontinue the use of a certain book, which was entitled Readings from the Bible, in the public schools of Detroit. The writ was granted by the circuit court, and the board appealed to the Supreme Court. In a 4-1 decision, the Supreme Court of Michigan reversed the judgment of the circuit court. And therefore, it decided in favor of Bible reading in the public schools of Detroit. Among other things, the court said in the majority opinion, quote, reading the Bible is no more an interference with religious belief than would reading the mythology of Greece or Rome be regarded as interfering with religious belief or affirming the pagan creeds. Again, the court asked, does it harm one who does not, for conscientious reasons, care to listen to readings from the Bible that others are given the opportunity to do so? Is it not intolerant for one not required to attend to object to such readings? The court concluded its opinion by stating, we are not able to see why extracts from the Bible should be proscribed when the youth are taught no better authenticated truths of profane history. Which is rather interesting. By way of interest, it's fascinating to note that the lone dissenting judge, remember the decision was 4-1, wrote an opinion which spreads over 10.5 pages of the court record, as over against 3.5 pages comprising the majority opinion. This frequently happens. A portion of the dissenting judge's opinion may be instructive, however, to get the whole thing out in front of us. Judge Moore wrote, we all agree that children should be carefully educated in religion. They should be taught to fear God and to love their fellow men. They should be made familiar with the truths of the Bible. They should be instructed to remember their Creator in the days of their youth and to observe His commandments. But this is a branch of education which is not within the province of the state. It belongs to the parents, the home, the Sunday school, the mission, and the church. And in dealing with the equity of the excusal clause, namely that children or their parents who didn't want their children to remain during the readings from this book could be excused from the class, Moore stated, it is said that the school board have removed all objection to the religious exercise embraced in the stated reading of this religious book by excusing those children whose parents may request it from joining in it. If under the ordinance of 1787 and the Constitution, it is the duty of the schools to teach religion, as counsel claim, it is not easy to see how the schools can abdicate that function and teach it to some of the pupils and fail to teach it to the others. Neither would this obviate the difficulty growing out of the fact that the money of the taxpayer is taken from him to impart religious instruction of which he does not approve. Well, so much for case number 10. This is Pfeiffer versus Board of Education of City of Detroit. The next case, case number 11, took place in the Supreme Court of Nebraska. 1902. It is entitled State by Relation of Freeman versus Sheeve. This decision is contrary to Bible reading in the public schools, and I think therefore we ought to refer to it. This action was brought by Daniel Freeman against School District No. 21 in Gage County, Nebraska, praying for a writ of mandamus to compel the school district to forbid a certain teacher from engaging daily in certain religious and sectarian exercises consisting of the reading of passages from the King James Version of the Bible, the offering of prayer to the deity, and the singing of religious and sectarian songs according to the customs and usages of the so-called Orthodox evangelical churches. The school board denied that such practices were sectarian, but the teacher concerned admitted that she regarded them as constituting a religious worship, and that she conducted them solely for that reason. That made a little bit of a problem between the school board and the teacher. The court held that such exercises were devotional, worshipful, intended for religious edification or instruction, and sectarian, and ordered that a judgment of the district court be reversed and that a peremptory writ of mandamus be issued to compel the school board to stop these religious exercises in the public school. It is interesting to note that in the decision, three judges were represented by the majority opinion and two concurred with the three only to the extent that the exercises complained of were sectarian. Judge Holcomb, one of the two who concurred partially, stated, "As to the views apparently entertained and held to in the opinion to the effect that the exercises complained of constitute thereby the schoolhouse a place of worship, I do not agree." He went on to say that, quote, "The Bible is not a sectarian book, and it is an erroneous conception to so regard it. Can anyone successfully contend in the light of the contemporaneous history of the times that the constitutional framers and the people who adopted that instrument intended to altogether exclude the Bible from the schools?" Thus, if one wishes to quote Freeman versus Sheeve in favor of the complete removal of the Bible and of religious influences from the public schools, he should point out that in this sense, this was a split decision, a 3-2 decision. Case number 12 is entitled Billard versus Board of Education. It took place in Kansas, Supreme Court of Kansas, in 1904. And the court decided in favor of Bible reading in the public schools. A case number 13 took place in Kentucky before a court of appeals. Kentucky, they have a slightly different arrangement in their state system. It's entitled Hackett versus Brooksville Graded School District. It took place in 1905, and the decision was in favor of Bible reading in the public schools. Number 14 took place in the great state of Texas. I'm not from Texas myself, but perhaps some care to cheer. In Texas, the Supreme Court of Texas, and it's entitled Church versus Bullock, took place in 1908, and the decision was in favor of Bible reading. I think I'd like to refer to this one. It illustrates another aspect of this whole matter. This action was brought by E.H. Church, that's a man's name, who was a Protestant, J.B. Jackson, and Mrs. Lita Garrity, both Roman Catholics, and M. Cohen and Abe Levine, who were both Jews, against the Board of Trustees of the public school of the city of Corsicana, praying for mandamus to compel the trustees to desist from conducting certain exercises alleged to be religious and sectarian. Having been denied relief in the district court and in the Court of Civil Appeals, the plaintiffs appealed to the Supreme Court of Texas. The assignments of error presented by the appellants were subsumed under three propositions. First, the said exercises converted the schoolroom into a place of worship. Second, the said exercises rendered the public schools sectarian. And third, the said exercises converted the public schools into a sect, religious society, theological, or religious seminary. The school board answered the charges as follows. First, as far as converting the schoolroom into a place of worship, the Supreme Court of Texas said, "Since in the houses of the state legislature, the chapel of the state university building, the blind institute, the state prisons and penitentiaries, there are chaplains, prayers, Bible readings, and sometimes songs, then to hold that the offering of prayers, either by the repetition of the Lord's Prayer or otherwise, the singing of songs, whether devotional or not, and the reading of the Bible make the place where such is done a place of worship, would produce intolerable results. Second, as far as rendering the public school sectarian, the court said, however one views the exercises, there is nothing in the evidence to show that they were in the interest of or forwarding the views of any one denomination of people. The school was not rendered sectarian within the meaning of the Constitution by the exercises shown to have been indulged in by the teachers. And thirdly, as far as constituting the public school a seminary or a theological school, a seminary being a place of education, the adjectives theological or religious necessarily give to it the meaning of a place specifically for the preparation of men for the ministry or at least for the teaching of religious doctrines. The school at Corsicana would not be a theological or religious seminary because some acts of worship were performed there. And thus the Supreme Court of Texas affirmed the judgments of the District Court and the Court of Civil Appeals in denying to the plaintiffs the mandamus which was asked for. That's case number 14 in this list. Case number 15 is also very fascinating and rather important. It took place in the Supreme Court of Illinois in the year 1910. It has a long name, People by Relation of Ring, R-I-N-G, versus Board of Education of District 24. That's sometimes just referred to as Ring versus Board of Education. This action was a petition filed in the name of the people upon relation of Jeremiah Ring, John J. Doyle, Joanna Watt, Mary Murphy, and Bridget Markilly against the Board of Education of School District Number 24 in Scott County, Illinois. And it prayed for a peremptory writ of mandamus to require this board to cause the teachers in the public schools of the district to discontinue the practice of reading passages from the King James Version of the Bible, from causing the pupils to recite in concert the Lord's Prayer, and from singing sacred hymns. The petition was dismissed by the circuit court, and the plaintiffs appealed to the Supreme Court. The plaintiffs, who were members of the Roman Catholic Church, complained that their church disapproved of the King James Version and of the form of the Lord's Prayer used in the schools, that during the Bible reading and the Lord's Prayer, the pupils were required to rise in their seats, fold their hands, and bow their heads, that these exercises were devotional, sectarian, and violative of the right of the free exercise and enjoyment of religious profession and worship, that the said exercises were in violation of the constitutions of Illinois and of the United States, and that since there was no parochial or private school in the county of Scott, they were compelled by law to send their children to the public schools in which their religious rights and liberties were abridged. The court held that the exercises constituted worship and that they constituted a violation of the guarantee of freedom of worship. The court said, if the petitioner's children are required to join in the acts of worship as alleged in the petition, they are deprived of the freedom of religious worship guaranteed to them by the Constitution. The wrong arises not out of the particular version of the Bible or form of prayer used, whether that found in the Douay or the King James Version, or the particular songs sung, but out of the compulsion to join in any form of worship. The free enjoyment of religious worship includes freedom not to worship. The court also held that the Bible is a sectarian book. The court said, the Bible in its entirety is a sectarian book as to the Jew and every believer in any religion other than the Christian religion. And as to those who are heretical or who hold beliefs that are not regarded as orthodox, whether it may be called sectarian or not, its use in the schools necessarily results in sectarian instruction. For solution to this problem, the court prescribed, the only means of preventing sectarian instruction in the school is to exclude altogether religious instruction by means of the reading of the Bible or otherwise. Drawing its opinion to a conclusion, the court stated, the exclusion of a pupil from this part of the school exercises in which the rest of the school joins separates him from his fellows, puts him in a class by himself, deprives him of his equality with the other pupils, subjects him to a religious stigma, and places him at a disadvantage in the school which the law never contemplated. All this is because of his religious belief. If the instruction or exercise is such that certain of the pupils must be excused from it because it is hostile to their or their parents' religious belief, then such instruction or exercise is sectarian and forbidden by the Constitution. Accordingly, the court found for the plaintiffs, for the Roman Catholic plaintiffs, reversed the judgment of the circuit court and remanded the case back to the circuit court for appropriate action. I don't know at this precise moment how many judges comprised the state Supreme Court of Illinois at that particular point in time, or how many sat on the bench in that particular decision. But if it was comprised of five justices, as is frequently the case, then this was a 3-2 decision, since Justice Hand and Justice Cartwright joined in a lengthy, earnest dissent. These justices argued that the Bible is not sectarian. Quote, "To make the Bible sectarian, it must be made to appear that it teaches the dogmas of some particular sect, and it is not sufficient to show that it is sectarian to establish that its teachings are so comprehensive that different phases of belief may be founded on arguments based upon some of its parts. To the charge that the exercises converted the school into a place of worship, these justices argued that the sessions of legislative assemblies were opened by prayer, and that similar exercises in schools no more made them places of worship within the meaning of the Constitution than they made legislative halls places of worship. At most, the dissenting opinion said, the children of relators were required to remain quiet during the exercises, and the fact that they were required to bow their heads and fold their hands during the exercises did not convert the school into a place of worship. This did not compel the pupil to join in the prayer, but only to assume an attitude which was calculated to prevent interruption by avoiding all communication with others during the service. Justices Hand and Cartwright, in attempting to trace the implications of this decision, stated, the Constitution is not directed against the Bible, but applies equally to all forms and phases of religious beliefs. If the Bible is to be excluded because it pertains to a religion and a future state, heathen mythology must go with it. Moral philosophy must be discarded because it reasons of God and immortality. And all literature which mentions a supreme being or intimates any obligations to him must be excluded. We cannot conceive that the framers of the Constitution or the people intended that the best and most inspiring literature, history, and science should be excluded from the public schools so that nothing should be left except that which has been sterilized so as not to interfere with the beliefs or offend the sensibilities of atheists. Pretty strong language from Justices Hand and Cartwright. Finally, the dissenting opinion argued that, quote, the decisions of the question whether the Bible shall be read in the public schools should be left where it has rested from the foundation of the state and through its entire history, that is, with the local school boards, and asserted that, quote, while it is true this court may construe the Constitution, it has not the power, and it should not, under a pretext to construe the Constitution, amend it. Well, so much for case number 15, which has that fascinating dissenting opinion in it. Case number 16 was held in the Supreme Court of Louisiana. We're covering the states, you notice? You notice that? We're getting through a lot of states here. Supreme Court of Louisiana. This was entitled Herald versus Parish Board of School Directors. Took place in 1915, and it was contrary to Bible reading in the public schools. Case number 17 took place in the Supreme Court of Iowa, and it is entitled Knowlton versus Baumhover. Took place in 1918 and was in favor of Bible reading in the public schools. The 18th case in this list took place in Georgia, the Supreme Court of Georgia, and was entitled Wilkerson versus City of Rome. Rome, Georgia, you understand. Yeah. No allusion here to the Roman Catholic Church. There's nothing, or City of Rome, Italy. But the City of Rome, Georgia. It took place in 1922, and the decision was in favor of Bible reading in the public schools. Case number 19 took place in the Supreme Court of Colorado. It is entitled People by Relation of Volmar versus Stanley. took place in the year 1927. It was a unanimous decision in favor of Bible reading in the public schools. Supreme Court of Colorado, 1927. It was an action brought by the people on the relation of Charles L. Vollmar against George B. Stanley and other members of the Board of Education of the Platteville Consolidated Schools, District No. 118, praying for mandamus to compel the board to revoke their rule requiring the reading of the Bible as a part of morning exercises and to prohibit such religious exercises in the public schools of the district. The district court issued an alternative writ of mandamus to which the school board demurred. In subsequent court action, the demurrer was sustained and the cause was dismissed, and thus it was appealed to the Supreme Court of Colorado. The writ revealed, this is interesting, that at first Vollmar's children withdrew during the Bible reading, and that thereupon the school board ruled that no pupil might leave the room during the reading. The plaintiff claimed that the King James Version was a sectarian religious book proscribed by his Roman Catholic Church, that such reading was religious service and sectarian instruction, that the board's action was contrary to the National Constitution and to the Colorado Constitution, and that the reading of the Bible was intolerant and a form of religious persecution. The court argued rather ingeniously. The opinion states, quote, "It is claimed, however, to distinguish the sectarian parts of the Bible is impracticable, and that we can make the section of the state constitution practicable by excluding all religious matters from the schools. Further, it is not easier but probably harder to determine what is or is not religious than what is or is not sectarian. What parts of Longfellow or Holmes are religious? Is the hymn to the night or the chambered nautilus or Lincoln's second inaugural religious or not? With regard to the question, is the Bible sectarian or not, the court said, the Bible is a compilation of many books. Even an atheist could find nothing sectarian in the book of Esther. Can we not separate the sectarian teachings of the Bible as practically as those of any other book? What right have we to say that the whole is when we know that part is not? It is argued that because some sects regard the whole Bible as sacred and inspired and other not, it is therefore sectarian, non sequitur. That's a bad argument. Sectarian or not cannot be determined of a book by how sects regard it. The decisive question is whether it teaches some doctrine peculiar to a sect. With regard to the King James Version, the court said, it is said that King James Bible is proscribed by Roman Catholic authority, but proscription cannot make that sectarian which is not actually so. If it could, the atheists could proscribe the Star Spangled Banner. The Calvinists, Whittier, and and the fundamentalists, half of modern science. And to the claim of intolerance, the court said, it is said that reading the Bible is intolerant and a form of religious persecution. But if those who do not like it can stay away and yet say to those who do like it, you shall not read it here, then who is intolerant? Are those who stay away persecuted? It is urged that to absent themselves for a religious reason subjects the pupils to a religious stigma and places them at a disadvantage. We cannot agree to that. The shoe is on the other foot. We have known many boys to be ridiculed for complying with religious regulations, but never one for neglecting them or absenting himself from them. However, because the school board had ruled that no pupil might leave the room during the Bible reading, the court reversed the judgment of the lower court with directions to proceed with the cause in accordance with its opinion. Upon a motion for rehearing by the school board, the court stated, we all agree, however, that the principal controversy, that is, the question as to reading the Bible in the public schools, was resolved in favor of defendants, that is, the school board, and that therefore we are justified in doing what we frequently do in such cases, modifying the judgment and affirming it as modified. The rehearing is denied, the judgment of the district court is modified, and we direct the board to revoke their order of compulsory attendance on the reading of the Bible. As modified, it is affirmed. It should be mentioned that two of the justices concurred in that part of the majority opinion which held that the Bible might be read in the public schools, but dissented from the part which permitted optional attendance on the part of the pupils. They wished to make it compulsory. Two of the justices of the Supreme Court wished to make attendance upon Bible reading compulsory. They agreed with the rest of the opinion retaining Bible reading. Well, that's fascinating. Case number 20 took place in Minnesota. The Supreme Court, Kaplan versus Independent School District of Virginia. That's Virginia, Minnesota. Took place in 1927, same year, and the decision was a 6-1 decision in favor of Bible reading. Number 21 took place in South Dakota in the Supreme Court. State by relation of finger versus Weedman took place in 1929, contrary to Bible reading, but it was a split decision, 3-2. Case number 22, Supreme Court of New York County. Now, New York has another system again of courts. Took place in 1935. It is entitled Lewis, L-E-W-I-S, versus Board of Education of the City of New York. Rather famous case. 1935. Unanimous decision in favor of Bible reading in the public schools. 1935. You say, I can hardly believe that looking at New York City now. Nevertheless, that was the decision. Case number 23, we finally come to New Jersey. The Supreme Court of New Jersey took place in 1950. There's quite a gap there between 35 and 50. You see that? Why, I don't know. This is entitled Doremus versus Board of Education of the Borough of Hawthorne, New Jersey. 1950. Unanimous decision in favor of Bible reading. Case number 24 took place in the state of Tennessee. Supreme Court, Cardin versus Bland, 1956. This was decided in favor of Bible reading. This is as late as 1956, just 20 years ago. And there was no dissent. Case number 25 brings us to a very fascinating case. 25 took place in the Court of Appeals in the state of Maryland. Took place in the year 1962, and it's entitled Murray versus Curlett. This is Madeline Murray. 1962, it was a split decision, 4-3, but it was in favor of Bible reading in the public schools. Baltimore in this case. So Madeline Murray lost that particular round, but she's going to be back in a minute. Case number 26 took place in Florida, Supreme Court of Florida, 1962. A 7-0 decision in favor of Bible reading in the public schools. The case is entitled Chamberlain versus Dade County Board of Public Instruction. Case number 27 is the most important case. If all the rest were to go, that's the most important case as far as its impact is concerned. Case number 27, for the first time, a case on Bible reading came to the United States Supreme Court. First time in the history of the United States. It came in the year 1963. And it is entitled Abington School District versus Shemp. Frequently just referred to as the Shemp case. His name is spelled S-C-H-E-M-P-P. Abington School District versus Shemp. Abington, Pennsylvania is where the case was first heard and the suit was first brought against the Abington School District, in which, interestingly enough, Dr. Murray lives and lived at that time, as I recall. The action was first brought in September of 1959 in the United States District Court, Eastern District, Pennsylvania, brought by Edward Lewis Shemp, Sidney Gerber Shemp, in behalf of themselves and their children, Ellery Frank Shemp, Roger Wade Shemp, and Donna Kay Shemp. The suit prayed for a declaratory judgment of unconstitutionality and the permanent enjoining of the practices of Bible reading and recitation of the Lord's Prayer in the public schools of Abington Township. At that time, Section 1516 of the Public School Act of March 10, 1949 of Pennsylvania provided that, quote, at least 10 verses from the Holy Bible shall be read or caused to be read without comment at the opening of each public school on each school day by the teacher in charge, provided that where any teacher has other teachers under and subject to direction, then the teacher exercising such authority shall read the Holy Bible or cause it to be read as herein directed. If any school teacher whose duty it shall be to read the Holy Bible or cause it to be read shall fail or omit so to do, said school teacher shall, upon charges preferred for such failure or omission and proof of the same, before the Board of School Directors of the school district, be discharged. That was pretty strong. This was in effect all the way up to 1959. And of course, the Shemps, who were Unitarians, who attended the Unitarian Church in Germantown, Pennsylvania on a regular basis, they contended that this statute was unconstitutional. It was an establishment of a religion and a prohibiting of the free exercise thereof in violation of Amendment 1 of the Constitution of the United States. Two of the children, Roger and Donna, testified that they never protested these practices to their teachers or school officials. In fact, Donna had herself volunteered at times to read the Bible before her homeroom class. The father also testified that he had not complained of the practices. However, Ellery, the oldest child, had complained. In his junior year of high school, Ellery had read the Quran during the Bible reading. And he had refused to stand during the Lord's Prayer. When spoken to by his teacher, he asked to be excused. And he was sent first to the vice principal, then to the guidance counselor. During the remainder of his junior year, he spent the, quote, morning devotions, end quote, period, in the guidance counselor's office. At the beginning of his senior year, he asked his homeroom teacher to be excused from the exercises, but was told that he should remain in the homeroom with the other students. He complied with this directive and graduated in June of 1958. And thus, by September 1959, the suit, insofar as it concerned Ellery, was moot. It no longer had any force because he had graduated by that time. The three-man court stated its findings of fact and conclusions of law they found for the Shemps and against the school district. The court judged Section 1516 of the Pennsylvania Public School Code to be violative of the First and the 14th Amendments, in that it provided for an establishment of religion and interfered with the free exercise of religion. The court thus found that the practice of Bible reading and recitation of the Lord's Prayer by students in the public schools of Abington Township unconstitutional and enjoined these practices. Following this, of course, Abington School District appealed to the Supreme Court of the United States. While the appeal was pending, Pennsylvania legislature passed an amendment to the school code in which students who did not wish to remain during the Bible reading could be excused. And so now, the issues having been changed, the Supreme Court remanded the case back for further adjudication. So, in January 1961, the Shemps filed a supplemental pleading, and so the case went on. And Edward Shemp decided that he should not have Roger or Donna, the two younger children, excused from the morning exercises, lest they be discriminated against and mishearing the daily announcements made during that time. But they continued to seek to have Section 15 as amended and the daily exercises declared unconstitutional and enjoined. So on February 2, 1962, the United States District Court once again found in favor of the Shemps and against the Abington School District. And so the Abington School District once again appealed to the Supreme Court of the United States. And in February 1963, the Supreme Court of the United States took up not only the Shemp appeal, but also the Murray versus Curlett appeal from the Court of Appeals of Maryland. It looked quite clear that this was going to be a landmark case. Since in Shemp versus School District of Abington Township, the court gave judgment to the Shemps, the plaintiffs, whereas in Murray versus Curlett, the court gave its decision in favor of the school district. So both these cases were taken at once and decided at once. Interestingly enough, the Attorney General of Maryland appearing in connection with the Murray versus Curlett case was joined by the two Assistant Attorneys General of Maryland, and joining them in the brief on the behalf of their respective states as friends of the court were the Attorneys General, now get this, of Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Kansas, Louisiana, Maine, Mississippi, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, North Carolina, Rhode Island, South Carolina, South Dakota, and Tennessee. All the attorneys general of those states, as friends of the court, filed with the brief in the Murray versus Curlett case. In addition, briefs were filed by representatives of the American Jewish Committee, representatives of the Synagogue Council of America, and by representatives of the American Ethical Union in behalf of Madeline Murray and her son. Well, it's absolutely fascinating. I could quote a great deal from it. The basic decision of the Supreme Court of the United States in 1963, in this case, Abington School District versus Shemp, an 8-1 decision, by the way, was that the government is neutral, and while protecting all, it prefers none and it disparages none. That was delivered by Mr. Justice Clark, who delivered the opinion of the court. It's fascinating. He was joined in a concurring opinion by Mr. Justice Douglas, Mr. Justice Brennan, who, by the way, wrote a 73-page concurring opinion. 73 pages. However, one justice dissented, Justice Stewart, Potter Stewart. Justice Stewart said, "The central value embodied in the First Amendment, and more particularly in the guarantee of liberty contained in the 14th, is the safeguarding of an individual's right to free exercise of his religion. It is this concept of constitutional protection embodied in our decisions which makes the cases before us such difficult ones for me. For there is involved in these cases a substantial free exercise claim on the part of those who affirmatively desire to have their children's school day open with the reading of passages from the Bible. Question, is their free exercise of religion being abridged?" See, there's the other side of the coin. "It might be argued," writes Justice Stewart, "that parents who want their children exposed to religious influences can adequately fulfill that wish off school property and outside school time. With all its surface persuasiveness, however, this argument seriously misconceives the basic constitutional justification for permitting the exercises at issue in these cases. For a compulsory state education is an artificial and state-created disadvantage. Viewed in this light, permission of such exercises for those who want them is necessary if the schools are truly to be neutral in the matter of religion. And a refusal to permit religious exercises thus is seen not as the realization of state neutrality, but rather as the establishment of a religion of secularism, or at the least, as government support of the beliefs of those who think that religious exercises should be conducted only in private. Mr. Justice Stewart, following this line of reason, continued, "It is clear that the dangers of coercion involved in the holding of religious exercises in a classroom differ qualitatively from those presented by the use of similar exercises or affirmations in ceremonies attended by adults. Even as to children, however, the duty laid upon government in connection with religious exercises in the public schools is that of refraining from so structuring the school environment as to put any kind of pressure on a child to participate in those exercises. It is not that of providing an atmosphere in which students are kept scrupulously insulated from any awareness that some of their fellows may want to open the school day with prayer, or of the fact that there exist in our pluralistic society differences of religious belief. The governmental neutrality which the First and 14th Amendments require in the cases before us, in other words, is the extension of even-handed treatment to all who believe, doubt, or disbelieve, a refusal on the part of the state to weight the scales of private choice." Well, in the cases that have followed since Abington School District versus Shemp, there have been 8. All of them have been footnotes to Abington School District versus Shemp. The Supreme Court has thus spoken, and all the other cases in New Jersey, once again, immediately, Hawthorne, we saw before, now a suit was instituted once again in Hawthorne, and this time, of course, the decision was contrary to Bible reading, based upon the Abington School District versus Shemp. See, they could use the Supreme Court decision as the basis. In Massachusetts, the Supreme Court in 1964, Attorney General versus School Committee of North Brookfield, contrary to. In Delaware, U.S. District, Johns versus Allen in 1964, contrary to. In Idaho, U.S. District Court, Adams versus Engel King, 1964, contrary to. In Massachusetts, Supreme Court, 1964, Waite versus School Committee of Newton, contrary to. In U.S. District Court of Michigan, Reed versus Van Hoven, 1965, here is a unique thing. There is an experimental attempt tried by the court, an experimental attempt at neutrality. And there was no dissent on that decision. That case, Reed versus Van Hoven, is an interesting one to look into. However, this was a case in which the judge said, "We're going to try an experiment. It's a probationary thing. We're going to try and see if those who wish to have prayer or read the Bible may do so in the morning, but no later than 5 minutes before the school day begins, and no earlier, if they wish to do so after school, than 5 minutes after the school day ends." So they're trying that as an experiment. I don't know how that experiment is working, but at least the judge felt that the decisions that have been made up to that point on the basis of Abington School District versus Shemp, simply contrary to, was not really an answer. It did not really come to grips with the problem of establishing neutrality, which was what the Shemp decision supposedly it was intended to do. 2 other cases, Alabama, U.S. District Court in 1971, Alabama Civil Liberties Union versus Wallace. That's Governor Wallace, 1971, contrary to. And Arkansas, the last case in 1973, U.S. District Court of Arkansas, Goodwin versus Cross County School District number 7, contrary to. Again, all these decisions contrary to since 1963 are either no dissent or unanimous decisions, with the one exception of Reed versus Van Hoven in 1965, where they're trying this experiment. Well, I said I would like to look at some analysis of this. and some synthesizing of this. Let me just say this one thing. From 1854 till 1963, there were 26 cases tried in our courts. In 19 of those 26, judgment was in favor of Bible reading. Two of the 26 were inconclusive, and in the remaining five cases, judgment was rendered contrary to Bible reading. So in those 26 cases, you have 19 for and 5 against, with two inconclusive. Since 1963, the eight cases have rendered judgment against the use of the Bible in public school exercises, including the Reed versus Van Hoven, because that's outside of school time. That's outside of school time. So even though they're trying an experiment, they agree with the Supreme Court decision to that extent. The thing that I discovered in all of this, and this is my final observation, my professor at Lehigh, in a course on school law, kept saying throughout the semester, the law is what the judges say it is. At first, I thought that was a cynical statement that he was making. As I went through the course and studied these cases, I discovered that that is in fact the truth. The law is what the judges say it is. When you look at the history of this situation, it really depends on who is sitting on the bench. There can be a reshuffling of people on the United States Supreme Court bench, and of the justices who are sitting there now, we may see a change depending on the attrition rate and the new appointments and so forth. But until that happens, frankly, and I don't mean to be pessimistic, I don't really see any hope of getting Bible reading back into the public schools. There has to be an amendment to the Constitution, or that the composition of the Supreme Court has to be changed as far as the justices are concerned. I would like to see tested, it's going to take some money to do it, but I would like to see tested the use of the Bible as an anthology of great literature or as a source book of philosophical and psychological insights or as a reference work of ancient history and archaeology. I'd like to see that tested in the courts because this decision does not rule the use of the Bible out in those categories. So I think people have become scared and the school districts have become afraid. And so from superintendents to assistant superintendents and supervisors and principals and all the way down, many school districts have become afraid to do anything with regard to the Bible at all. But I'd really love to see, because this decision did not rule out the use of the Bible in those categories. If that was tested and the Bible was ruled out even in those usages, then I think you might have a very good case that what we have done is swung over to a religion of secularism, in which instead of protecting religious freedom and maintaining it, as well as keeping away from the establishment of religion, we have actually gone to establishing another religion.
Other helpful cassettes are available from Biblical Theological Seminary. We minister to people through our graduate and postgraduate degree programs, our community evening school, our cassette ministry, special seminars, and a free publication, Biblical Bulletin, containing interesting articles by biblical faculty members. For a free cassette catalog or more information about the seminary, please write to Biblical Theological Seminary, 200 North Main Street, Hatfield, Pennsylvania, zip code 19440.